All right, we are on week number 6. Time is flying. Commandment number 4. And why don't we look in our text, Exodus chapter number 20. And if you have not yet grabbed the notes, they're on the front table there for tonight. Exodus chapter number 20. And it says in verse number 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And so that is the commandment. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. There's quite a few things, if you think about it, in the Bible that God said to remember. But this is one of those, the only commandment that God had to say remember. And I think that there's a tendency for us, we're either lazy or we're driven. Now, there's exception to that, but I have a feeling that you could probably categorize yourself pretty close to one of those. Balance is a difficult thing for most people living in the United States of America. We're in a very fast-paced lifestyle, and on top of that, we live in a state called New York, and thus we have things called the New York Second, the New York Minute, all those kinds of things, because New York, when I lived in Michigan, we lived in, it was blue-collar, and farming land, everything was slow, from the way the people drove, to the way the people talked, to the way the people did things at church. Everything was slow. And when the Lord opened up the opportunity and we were considering coming to First Bible, that is one of the things, in all honesty, my family and I had to consider. We had two choices. We were either considering going to Encounter Revival Ministries full-time, or we were going to come here to First Bible. And one of the primary issues to us that was a concern was the fast-paced lifestyle that would draw us into chaos as a family, thus less time together, less time for training, less time to minister together, and that's something that we have to constantly fight. And I think that God is, in this commandment, is saying remember it, because we do tend to forget it. We tend to get so busy with the things that are going on around us, and many times they're good things, but many times they're wasteful things. And God has to remind us to keep that in mind and to remember. We do, as human beings, have a tendency to forget things. Remember the Sabbath day. He told us as we're taking communion, that is the purpose of communion, is to remember what the Lord had done for us. And it's kind of sad that He has to remind us of those things. But this is one of those things. He reminds us that we are to keep the Sabbath day and to keep it holy, separate, as a day that is different. And that is the commandment. Now I want to look at a couple of the primary purposes of the Sabbath. And we will look at these on top of page number 60. And the first primary purpose of the Sabbath was that it was a sign of the covenant between God and Israel. And the text given in Exodus chapter 31, verse number 16, it says, wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day He rested and was refreshed. So this is one of the primary purposes. It was a sign or a covenant between God and Israel, which also, by the way, is one of the reasons why we would say that we're not held to it today, because it is a sign or a covenant between God and Israel. Today in our society, we also don't have to be circumcised. That was a covenant between God and Israel. We don't have to keep the Sabbath day, at least in the same way is what it is given here in the commandment in Exodus chapter number 20. So the question is that you and I have to answer, and that other people will be asking, is the Sabbath day required for us in the New Testament church? Is the Sabbath a required day for us to observe? And we mentioned in the opening classes that this commandment, commandment number four, is the only commandment not repeated in the New Testament as a commandment. And it is mentioned in the New Testament, but it's not mentioned in the, as a commandment to you and I. There are some principles that are learned from it, but it's not repeated as a commandment. The other thing is the Sabbath for us today, Colossians 2:16, which is the last time that the word Sabbath is used in our Bible. It says, don't let any man judge you according to the Sabbath, or any holy day, as it mentions. And so we're not to worry on that. But one of the things that we'll learn is the Sabbath is a picture of the finished work of Jesus Christ on the cross. It is a cessation or an ending of work and a time of rest. Jesus Christ fulfilled the Sabbath when he died on the cross and he finished the work. He said, it is finished, and thus we have the Sabbath. And you can read a little bit about that in Hebrews chapter number 4 and the comparison of that, that it was a shadow of things to come and it was a picture of Jesus Christ. He thus fulfilled that when he died on the cross. So it was a sign of the covenant between God and Israel. Number two, the second primary purpose of the Sabbath is healthy for people. It is healthy. As I mentioned to you, most of the time we're on one end or the other. There's few people that have actually learned how to balance their lives enough to where they Sabbath, rest, as well as work hard. And usually because of a need for money, we will work ourselves crazy and not have enough time for the most important things. Many of the people who do not come to church regularly and learn to Sabbath along with us is a lot of reason is that is because of work. Now, some people actually work on a Sunday, thus making it difficult. But on the other hand, there's also people who work so much Monday through Saturday that when Sunday comes, man, they just can't get their body out of bed. And so they cannot get themselves to that point. So we learn that God wants us to keep ourselves healthy. It's a time of rest. Now, some of us would say, well, I do observe the Sabbath, and I do rest on Sunday, we do no work. But let me say this to you, that you have no clue what Sabbath is until you follow it to the letter of the law, as the Old Testament did, where you sit and you do nothing. Nothing does not mean cleaning the house. Nothing does not mean doing some odds and ends jobs outside. It does not mean doing some typing on the computer. All of these things, which I would tend to do on a Sunday afternoon, say, this is relaxing, I'm at home, that's not Sabbath. That's not what God considered to be the Sabbath. So for those people who would say, I hold to the Sabbath even to today, understanding that we don't hold to the Sabbath like the Old Testament Jewish person held to the Sabbath. I got to tell you something, it's very difficult. I have trouble sitting and doing nothing. You ever sit on your couch and just sit there? I mean, usually we have background noise, whether it's a television, a radio, a CD player. We usually have something going on around us, and to sit there and do absolutely nothing, there are some of us that would go crazy. It was a matter of discipline to the Old Testament Jew. And so, although some people today would say they hold to the Sabbath, they don't hold to it, I doubt, like the Old Testament Jew held to it. But it was a healthy thing. They learned, their body learned to rest. It got recharged. I would venture to guess this is part of the reason why we have so many sicknesses in our society, why people get sick so often, because we don't give our body a chance to recover, a chance to rest and just do nothing. The Sabbath provides that for us each week. Each night is a shortened form of Sabbath, a time of rest for the body. Our bodies will find a way of rest if we don't give it on our own. Many times, it comes in the form of sickness. And this is how Rush Dooney puts it. He says, with regard to men, continued stress leads to death, we are told. Man's inability to rest, his lack of true Sabbath, his lack of faith, leads to a stress-filled life which ends in death. And so it is healthy for us. He says this in Exodus 23:12, 6 days shalt thou do thy work, and on the seventh day thou shalt rest. And thine oxen and thine ass may rest, and the son of thy handmaiden, the stranger, and this is how he ends this, may be refreshed. And so it is something that is healthy. We are actually refreshed when we take time to do nothing and to schedule that in our life. It is. It was healthy for the family. The Sabbath was remembered in the home as a family. This is the way that it was when they left Egypt on the final night of the Passover. They ate as a family and then applied the blood over their posts and remained in their place for safety. And, of course, that is what this is picturing, that rest. And so it was healthy for the family. Now, we all know that this is one of the things, one of the biggest struggles that families face today is time together. Very few families actually eat meals together anymore. Very few families actually sit down at night and spend quality time together. I think that I would say that some families are together at times, but not quality. Not where we're just being able to spend time as a family and enjoy one another, encourage one another, help one another, and refresh one another as a family. And too many families today are stretched beyond their limits, and they don't know what it is to Sabbath together. So the Sabbath was healthy for physical reasons. It was healthy for the family. It was also healthy for nature. And God mentions, and we won't get real in-depth in this, but the land was also supposed to get a Sabbath rest every 7 years. And here's some of the things I mentioned on page number 60 at the bottom. The seventh year is a Sabbath rest for the land. This meant no pruning or sowing. And it also meant, by the way, no reaping. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. Thou shalt neither sow thy field nor prune thy vineyard. And as you went on, verse number 5, which we will in a moment, you'll find that we also are not to harvest the land. This gives the land an opportunity to regenerate and to refresh itself. Our country, obviously, we don't follow that at all. Most farmers, because of the fact that we worry, we lack faith, that God will actually provide for us, because what happened was God said, if you obey me and you give your land rest on the seventh year, he said the sixth year, it will be a time of extreme blessing for you, enough so that you'll have enough food for the seventh year and for the eighth year, because the eighth year you won't have any food if you don't plant on the seventh. So you're going to need 2 to 3 years worth of food to be able to survive doing what God's told them to do. It was a matter of faith. Everything that God does is an issue of faith. Are you and I willing to trust him to do what he said? Will he really come through on his promise? And faith cometh by hearing, hearing by the word of God. And God said in Hebrews 11:6 that without faith it is impossible to please him. So the crops that grew on their own accord, number 2 under that, during the year of Sabbath could not be harvested. You could not go out and pick. Oh, look at that. The ground grew some stuff on its own. Let's go enjoy it. God said, leave it alone. Let the stuff die. Let it go back into the ground. It'll replenish the nutrients of the ground. Just leave it alone. So he says not to touch that stuff. So leave it alone. And so God told them that he would take care of them if they were to obey what they were doing. This commandment of letting the land rest. He said in Leviticus 25:20, if ye shall say, what shall we eat the seventh year? There's the question. I mean, what if I don't sow and I do what God tells me to do? I'm going to be in trouble. What's my family going to do? Verse 21, God said this, then I will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. And ye shall sow the eighth year, and eat yet of old fruit until the ninth year, until her fruits come in, and ye shall eat of the old store. God says, I will give you plenty if you just trust me, if you do what I tell you to do. So the land Sabbath really had to do with faith, and you know what? So does a regular Sabbath. The people in the Old Testament faced the same situations we do today. Now, obviously, we're in different scenarios. But you know what? The husbands back then worried about, hey, if I could work today, I'll be ahead tomorrow. They faced the same situation. So when it came to a Sabbath rest on the seventh day for them, they struggled with it. It was an issue of faith for them. If I work extra, I could pay off this bill and I can get ahead on this. And it's an issue of faith for us. In all these situations, it's an issue. Are we going to trust God that he will do what he says? Number three, the land Sabbath would be accomplished whether willingly by the inhabitants or forcefully by God. In other words, we could give our land a rest or God will give our land a rest. And Leviticus 26, then shall the land enjoy her Sabbath as long as it lies desolate, and ye be in your enemy's land. In other words, God said this, if you don't give your land Sabbath rest, I'm going to kick you out of it until it gets its rest. And you know what? It's interesting how much time they were in captivity. How many years was that? How many?
400.
How many years?
Which time?
Oh, the main time. The big time. I think it's interesting, though. Whatever time God said, He said this. He said, whatever amount of time it takes to get its rest, I will give it. And they were kicked out of the land many times, actually. But some of the main times, 490 years. God said this. Listen, down in verse 35, as long as it lieth desolate, it shall rest. Because it did not rest in your Sabbath when you dwelt upon it. The land also shall be left of them, and shall enjoy her Sabbath while she lieth desolate without them. And they shall accept the punishment of their iniquity. Because even because they despised my judgments, and because their soul abhorred my statutes. And so God said, if you don't willingly, every 7 years, give the land a rest, I will give it rest. And the people were kicked out of the land because of that. Now, Matthew Henry lists some of the benefits of the land Sabbath, and I think these are interesting. In that box on the bottom of page 61, God would hereby show them that He was their landlord, and that they were tenants at will under Him. Landlords are want to stipulate with their tenants when they shall break up the ground, how long they shall till it, and when they shall let it rest. God would thus grant and convey that good land to them under such provisos and limitations as should let them know that they were not proprietors, but dependents on their Lord. So they weren't in charge. It wasn't their land. And, you know, at times we say that about our possessions. And I was thinking that today as I was driving my van, and it's having, I think, the beginning of transmission problems. And I said, Lord, you know what? You know, and this is yours. So you're going to have to take care of it. And sometimes we say that without heart, but at the same time, God says, listen, the land is not yours. Let me take care of it. If you just do what I tell you, everything will be okay. Number two, it was kindness to their land to let it rest. And it actually was giving something to their posterity. They were taking care of it for those that were coming behind them. Number three, they would have more leisure to attend the exercise of religion and the knowledge of God and His law. If they took that year off of harvesting, of working the land, it would give them more time to get to know God better. They were taught to be charitable and generous, not to engross themselves in themselves. Number five, they were brought to live in a constant dependence upon divine providence, always reminding themselves that they had to trust God for what they had. Number six, they were reminded of the easy life that man lived in paradise when he ate of every good thing, not as in sense the sweat of his face. Labor and toil came in with sin. And seven, they were taught to consider how the poor lived. It's always good for us to remember that everything we have is grace. We don't deserve any of that, and there's always someone that has it worse than we do. And it was a good reminder to them. And then the eighth thing, the year of rest typified the spiritual rest which all believers enter into through Christ. What else did the Sabbath accomplish? The Sabbath, number three, at the top of page 62, was for remembrance of what God had done for them in delivering them from Egypt. It was a reminder of that. Remember it. Number four, worship was a part of the Sabbath, but not a primary. It was not a primary issue of the Sabbath, but it was something that was a part of it. Number Ezekiel 46:3 kind of gives that a little idea on that. Likewise, the people of the land shall worship at the door of the gate before the Lord in the Sabbath and in the new moons. And so there was some time. Luke 4:16, he came to Nazareth where he'd been brought up, speaking of Christ, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. So his custom was to be in the temple on the Sabbath day. And so those are some of the primary purposes of the Sabbath. And as I mentioned at the beginning, one of them also being that I did not mention there is the picture of what it represents. But let's look at letter B, the lessons and pictures of the Sabbath. Number one lesson, we ought to work and not be lazy. There were 6 days of work, then a day of rest. Those of us who are parents need to learn how to get our children to learn how to work. And we're doing not only them a disservice, but we're doing future generations one as well. Our country is going broke. Really, it is already broke, but it's getting worse. And studies out right now, they were just saying something today in regards to how, and I can't remember the terminology they used, how we're going broke because we have to cover all of the people who, number one, don't work, but number two, don't have any insurance. Now, there are some people that can't afford insurance. And then there are some people who don't get insurance because they don't want to pay the money, and they're going to milk the system. Now, that, again, that's not everybody, because some people don't, there's different reasons to not have insurance, but when some people do it because they know the system will take care of them anyway, you know who the system is, right? The system is the rest of us who do pay insurance. And insurance is a very expensive, and I'm not even going to call it an investment, because it's not, but it's a very expensive thing to pay for. And when other people, for example, as we talked about illegal immigrants, those people come in, they get surgery, who pays for it? They don't have money. They come into the emergency rooms in Texas and all over, all across that border. Who pays for them to get taken care of? The taxpayers of the United States of America do. Our insurance policies are going up. People, we are paying for people. Our mayor just went to New York City, or Albany, this last week to try and get more money for us. You know why? Because Rochester, along with Syracuse, Buffalo, and a couple other of our cities are so in debt by millions of dollars. And he said, we need to get more money because we have such a large, poor population. Well, it's interesting that some of those poor population, not all of them, but some of those poor populations sit on their porch drinking beer, buying lottery tickets. Well, where do they get the money to do that? Collecting welfare from you and I. I'm working hard. You're probably working hard. Where's the money coming from? Where are these people getting that? If they are healthy, they ought to be working. That's one of the lessons of the Sabbath. We ought to work and not be lazy. We need to teach our children that. We need to work that. If you were a boss, would you be happy with what you know about yourself and your work ethic? Would you be happy with yourself? I don't know if, remember if I told it in here, if it was with our students, that I remember times when I was working in high school and we would work together, me and my friends. There were three of us that worked at the same top store. It's a great job for high school. It was only 4 hours every night, and it was from 7 to 11 or 6 to 10. Perfect for me for getting it for my sports and getting my studies done and everything. So, but what we would do is we knew the clock, the time card, at 53 minutes of the hour, that meant that you made it for that hour. There was a 7-minute slush period there. So I would give we would give our cards to one of the guys. He would sit at the machine. We all left. Wait for the 6:53 to hit. Then he'd punch all the cards for us. Is that honest? Well, no, that's not honest. Why would you do that? If that were me paying the bill and I were paying everyone who was doing it, I'd be a little upset watching these guys, one guy punch everyone's card so that everyone else can leave early while I'm paying them. And but the question is, would you be happy with yourself, with your work ethic? The amount of time that you put in, the hard work that you put in. We need to learn to work hard. And it's a good testimony to those around us, but it's also important to God Himself. God hates laziness. 2 Thessalonians 3:10, and when they were with you, this command commanded you that if any would not work, neither should he eat. So let's change our system in the United States of America. If you are healthy, you have to have a job. We're not giving you freebies anymore. No more handouts. Imagine how much we would save in our country if we were to do that, if we were to live that principle. Now, if you're sick, and rightly so, then let's take care of those people because they have a reason for not being able to work. The same issue with widows. If a widow is a widow indeed, according to the Word of God, then we need as a church to take care of them. But if they have a son who's very healthy, that son better take care of their mother. Right? Isn't that the right thing to do? Why should a son come to the church leadership and say, hey, my mom has this need and this need? Okay, take care of it, buddy. You know, go ahead. And that's how it ought to be. But if they're a widow indeed, we need to take care of them. And if someone has a reason why they're not able to work, then let's take care of them. But if they're healthy, get out there and get a job. And the same thing with, I believe, with our prison population. Work, man. You want cable? Pay the bill. You got to earn the money if you want free cable. Well, it's not going to be free anymore. You want the workout? You want the gymnasium? $25 a day. You're gonna work. You don't have the money? Well, you're gonna work then. Press some more license plates. I know that was a long time ago. But whatever. Give them some work to do. If they're not gonna work, they don't get the benefits. They want 3 squares a day. If they want the good meals that they're getting, and some of them eat better than we do, probably. If they want to get that food, work for it. You only put in 2 hours a day. You only get one meal. Man, it'd be a great idea. And so that's part of the lesson in the pictures of the Sabbath, learning to work hard. Number two, the Sabbath is seen as a day of rest, redemption, and liberation. The rest or cessation of work speaks ultimately of the end of our work for victory over sin and the rest in the finished work of Jesus Christ. Now, there were a number of different Sabbaths in the Bible. I've mentioned the four. We're going to kind of hit on some of these in the next point, but here, just for listing them's sake, there is the creation Sabbath that we know of in Genesis chapter 2. There's the Hebrew Sabbath, which we talked about from the Ten Commandments, Exodus chapter 20. We also know that there are Sabbaths of special occasions. There's a high day or a high Sabbath, and one of those mentioned in the New Testament, as a matter of fact, but Leviticus 23 is the listed text there. And then we have the Christian Sabbath that some people would call it from Hebrews chapter number 4. Now, there were various lengths and times that a Sabbath was observed. Number one, a weekly Sabbath was a day of rest at the end of each week. This was a sign and a covenant with the children of Israel. So that's the one we've been talking about. And so that was every seventh day. But then number two, we have a seven-year Sabbath. Some believe this release was an actual extension for collecting what is owed, and that it was a relief to catch up. The 50-year release was an actual forgiving of debts, which we mentioned in just a moment. So every 7 years, there was a special Sabbath, and that's mentioned. Deuteronomy chapter number 15 gives the information on that. Then the third one that we mentioned is the 50-year Sabbath, also known as the year of Jubilee. This was a seven sabbatical years plus 1 year, the year of rest and release. Seven sets of 7 years, or seven times seven. It was marked by a year of release from indebtedness, Leviticus 24, bondage of all sorts, Leviticus 24, 39 through 55. All prisoners and captives were set free, slaves were released, and debtors were absolved. All property was reverted to the original owners. This plan curbed inflation and moderated acquisitions. It was also a new opportunity for those who had experienced hard times. It was a new beginning for a lot of people. So it worked great for the society. Jesus became our Jubilee by setting us free from the slavery of sin and paying the debt for our sins on the cross. The exception to this release in the Jubilee, not to what Jesus did to us, the exception was a house in the wall of a city that was not redeemed by the seller within a year of the sale. That's the one exception that that I know of. There might be others, but to the 50-year Sabbath or the Jubilee. And then number four, we mentioned some special ones, and Leviticus 23 kind of lists those. Now here's the fallout of the law, the consequences surrounding this commandment. What happened to those who did not keep it? The person guilty of breaking the Sabbath was to be stoned to death. God took this very serious. Numbers 15:32, and while the children of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man that gathered sticks on the Sabbath day. And they that found him gathering sticks brought him unto Moses and Aaron and unto all the congregation, and they put him in ward, because it was not declared what should be done to him. And the Lord said unto Moses, the man shall surely be put to death, all the congregation shall stone him with stones without the camp. And all the congregation brought him without the camp and stoned him with stones, and he died as the Lord commanded Moses. So they put him in ward, not sure what to do. Categorical laws usually don't carry the consequence with them. So they put him in ward to find out, what is God going to tell us to do? Obviously, God had told Moses what to do, because it tells us that he did what God commanded him to do. But they stoned him. Again, following the pattern that we've seen already, those who were witnesses were first to put their hand to the death of this person. This, again, was a protection from false witnesses. But also the whole congregation took part in this. And this was a lesson for everybody. If I knew that there's a lot of things beneficial that come out of this, if I knew that death was going to happen to Andy if he were to get caught working, and I thought he was headed to do something, I would stop him. You know, I don't want to be involved in stoning him. I don't want to be involved in taking his life. And I think you and I would find ourselves encouraging, holding each other a little more accountable if we knew the severe consequences that God was holding them to. And so the whole congregation was involved in what was going to happen to the person caught breaking the Sabbath. Exodus 31:14, ye shall keep the Sabbath therefore, for it is holy unto you. Everyone that defileth it surely shall be put to death. And whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. No questions, no compassion, just take care of it as God said to. Letter B, we already mentioned this, but God expelled the Hebrew nation out of the land due to their disobedience regarding the land having a Sabbath rest every 7 years. And that is given in 2 Chronicles chapter number 36. Now the framework of the law, any case laws that would be found under this commandment, let's look at the list of these. Here's the negative laws of the Sabbath. The negative side of this. In general, there was to be no work done on the Sabbath. We've given you many verses on that already, so let's go on to number two. Number two, no one should leave their house, their place, or their home on the Sabbath. They were to stay there. He says, every man abide ye every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. And so you are supposed to stay within the doors of your home. That, for some, is more negative than for others. Some people enjoy being in their home. I am one, when my day is done, I like to go home and be home. Now, there are some people, and I'm not saying this is bad, but there are some people that just will go crazy. And they like to go out in the town. If that means, and I know some people who just drive, and literally just drive. They just drive around. I have never been down this street. Okay, have fun. And I'm not sure what you're really going to get out of it, but I know people who just love to be out. They just don't like to be home. And so this would be more of a test for some people. Number three, beasts of burden should not be laden on the Sabbath day. Number four, no sheaves should be brought in on the Sabbath day. No wine was to be treaded in the presses on the Sabbath day. And many of these you'll see are taken from the book of Nehemiah, chapter number 13. Nehemiah, as you know, held people very responsible in that chapter for breaking the Sabbath. And he was very zealous for the Lord. No burden should be borne on the Sabbath day, number 6. Number 7, no fires should be kindled on the seventh day. No sticks should be gathered. We read that one already, Numbers 15. Number 9, no victuals or wares were to be bought on the Sabbath day. And in that illustration, or in that account, Nehemiah 10, Nehemiah had the doors closed and the people didn't know what to do with themselves. People were outside knocking, waiting to come in and to sell things, and he didn't allow it to happen. Number 10, no victuals or wares were to be sold on the Sabbath. And that's kind of obvious that they were not supposed to be bought. As number 4 said, no sheaves. And then obviously they were not to be sold either. So there were at least, in ones that I've listed, at least 10 different negative laws in regards to the Sabbath. We know that the Sabbath carried with it positive effects, positive consequence, but at the same time, many of the things that we've looked at would be perceived as negative. Now let's work down, we'll take a break in a moment, let's work down letter B, the positive laws of the Sabbath. These are found in the New Testament and in the teaching of Jesus Christ. Number 1, life could be saved on the Sabbath. Now, wouldn't that seem obvious to you? It seems obvious to me. And Jesus was a little frustrated with the blindness of the religious leaders of that day when he went around to save a life, and they got upset with him. But they watched him in Mark 3:2, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day, that they might accuse him. And he saith unto the man which had the withered hand, stand forth. And he said unto him, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath days or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they held their peace. They had no answer. They ought to know the answer. The answer was, it's better to save life, it's better to do good. But life could be saved. Number 2, the sick could be healed on the Sabbath day. This was due to the fact that the Sabbath was a memorial of redemption. And Jesus healed many people on the Sabbath day. Another illustration, Matthew chapter number 12. Number 3, rescuing an animal in peril was allowed on the Sabbath day. Matthew 12:11. The common sense conclusion of this is we are to do well on the Sabbath day. If we ought to feed and care for animals, we must conclude that a man is more important to God than animals, and therefore we should do good to them when opportunity arises on the Sabbath. Jesus' point was, if you are willing or able to, and you do lead your animals to feed and to drink on the Sabbath day, ought not we to do good to people as well? And so Jesus was clarifying the purpose of the Sabbath in many of these illustrations. Someone that was hungry could pick corn and eat it on the Sabbath day. Jesus and his disciples were walking through that field, and they grabbed the corn, they plucked it. And the Pharisees, the verse is given, 12:2, when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath day. He said unto them, have ye not read what David did when he was in hunger, and they did, that were with him, how he entered into the house of God, and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them that were with him, but only for the priests. And so Jesus was helping them to clarify what it was all about. They could eat. They could pluck the corn. It was not harvesting. They were plucking enough for them to eat as they were walking. Obviously, they weren't supposed to harvest. That would be the work. Number 5, a thirsty animal could be taken to water. Number 6, a priest could continue his regular ministry on the Sabbath. And we know that someone had to give the offerings on the Sabbath day, and the priests would do that. God gave an allowance for that. He allowed that to happen. And we find that to be true in ministry today. Obviously, if we hold Sunday as our Sabbath, it's not much of a Sabbath for Pastor Grace. When he is here at, say, 6 a.m. and he preaches for 3 hours, and he gets done at 1 o'clock, and many times he'll do things on Sunday afternoon, whether it's a baby dedication, sometimes it's a get acquainted luncheon, Then he comes back at 6 o'clock and he preaches again. And that would not be what we would consider a time of rest. Is God going to hold him responsible to not work on the Sabbath? Well, it was a given. It was understood that there was some work that had to be done. And number 7, circumcisions would take place on the Sabbath at the time of cleansing and separation fell on the Sabbath. And that was just one of those common sense things, understood that way. All right, let's stop right there for a break, and we'll give you just a couple moments to study for your problem text. We're not going to get real deep into this. We're just going to make mention of this. But the next thing under this area is the concept of social services. We've kind of poked some fun at this already. But those that are able to work need to work. When people start to receive something for nothing, it breeds laziness and dependency. Not that there's anybody in our government that wants us to be dependent. People should not be receiving a paycheck from the government when they are capable of working. And we mentioned again the cities of refuge and how those were set up for the person fleeing from the avenger of blood. But they were to work in the field to support their time in quote-unquote prison, which we know that wasn't prison, but a better way to understand that. Labor is required for those incarcerated because they ought not to be eating and receiving the benefits without laboring for it. And then those that are able to work are to provide for those that cannot. That is a concept for the church. We are to take care of the needs of those within our group that are suffering. And that's a privilege for us, not a duty. And a couple verses that are mentioned there. This equality is important. Each person was to pitch in and to help provide the needs of the one that could not work. Once they were well, if ever, they could in turn do the same for others. And this concept is just as true within the church, and more so as believers meet the needs of one another. We mentioned this briefly just a moment ago, the situation with widows. The family is the primary caretaker, and Paul makes sure that we understand we're supposed to prove a widow. And starting in verse 9 and 10, he kind of gives us some of the criteria that he was considering to be someone who would say that they were a widow. And he gives some very specific things there that we're to look for. Outside of that, he says the woman should just get remarried. And so social services, there's this concept. We are to take care of those who are truly in need, and if they meet the criteria, it's our responsibility, it's our privilege to do. If they don't meet that criteria, they ought to be working, or they need to find another way of taking care of those needs that they have. Number 4, the situation with the poor in the land. The farmers were not to reap the corners of the field, Leviticus 19:9. In other words, they were not to be so thorough that nothing was left in the field. And as we know with the story of Ruth, that is how she provided her needs for her and her mother-in-law. And it was also how the rest of the poor of the land were providing for it. She joined in with a bunch of other people. And they would go and they would basically reap what was left by the workers. And so the workers were not supposed to do the corners of the field, leave something for them that they could get to. Letter B, the farmers were not to gather the gleanings. Same concept. But they were supposed to leave some of what was on the vine or some of the stuff that was left in the field for the poor of the land. Letter C, if the farmer forgot a sheaf in the land, they were not to return for it. And this probably drove some of them nuts. You have an irresponsible worker who forgets to bring in the last load. And God said, if you forgot it, it's good for everyone else. You leave it right where you left it. You don't come back and get it. And there are some of us that probably would have been in big trouble back in those days, as we forget things quite often. But God said, if you forget it in the field, leave it there. And let it be for the poor of the land. Letter D, farmers were not to double pick the trees, but they were to leave it for the poor to pick. And again, that deals with being totally thorough and taking everything that was there. It's kind of, even though it was their trees, it was protecting from greediness. It was helping them to think of other people. Deuteronomy 24 is the context, verses 19 through 22. Letter E, the vineyards and fields could be picked without permission from the owner. Now, this was not, again, this was not a harvest. This was not, grab your buckets, grab your baskets, let's take a walk into Benson's field, we're going to take all of his food. That's not what he was talking about. But if I was at Benson's house and he had his lush garden in the back, and I was hungry, I could go and pick something and eat it. It was okay. I was not going to get arrested for it. I was not going to get in trouble for that. You what? So it was totally allowed. But it did not have to do with harvesting. And that's Deuteronomy 23, verses 24 and 25. And then letter D, rules for those lending to those in need. And God does have some rules in regards to lending. And the first thing is, no interest was to be charged to the poor. I mean, doesn't that make sense? You got some guy who's hard for money, doesn't have anything, he needs some help, so we give him some money and say, when you get it back to me, you owe me extra. And that kind of puts the person right back where he was. And God said, you're not to charge interest to the poor. Exodus 22:25, if thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as a usurer, neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. And so that was the law on that. No interest charged to other Jews. Deuteronomy 23:19. And that would be a good idea for us in regards to family. I've only borrowed money once from a family member. And, 1 second. Number three, interest may be charged to the stranger in the land. So he does make that exception in this. Unto the stranger thou mayest lend upon usury, but unto thy brother thou shalt not lend upon usury, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all that thou settest thine hand to do in the land whither thou goest to possess it. And God gave them some rules and said, if you follow these, I will bless you. Letter E, rules for pledges or collateral. Number one, you shouldn't take a man's livelihood as a form of collateral. And so Deuteronomy 24:6, no man shall take the nether or the upper millstone to pledge, for he taketh a man's life to pledge. Only really makes sense, common sense. If I am going to if someone is going to borrow or is going to use something as collateral, it wouldn't make sense to take the only income that he has for him to do that. Then he has no way of making up for it. So you should not take a man's livelihood as a form of collateral. Number two, a man's coat could be taken as a pledge, but not kept overnight. One of the other pieces of clothing that was used was the shoe. But here he talks about the raiment. And you should not keep that overnight. It's his covering, verse 27. It is his raiment for his skin. Wherein shall he sleep? And it shall come to pass when he crieth unto me that I will hear, for I am gracious. And God took this personal. So he said, if you're going to take collateral from someone and you take their coat, it's only for a short period of time. He says, if they cry unto me because they're cold and they can't sleep because of it, he said, I'm going to take care of it. It's going to be between you and me. Letter F, rules for the sale of land. God owns the land, and therefore rules are written and must be followed. And the one I have listed here, land could be redeemed by the family of them that had to sell it due to overwhelming debt. And so the family could take that over before someone else had opportunity to purchase it. Rules for servitude. A man was to be treated fairly. So God did give opportunity. There was slavery in the Bible. And God said that when you do have a slave, when you have a servant, you're to be treated fairly. And Exodus 21 speaks of that. If thou buy a Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve thee, and the seventh year he shall go free for nothing. That is the seventh year Sabbath. If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master have given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, he shall go out by himself. And if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free, then his master shall bring him unto the judges, and he shall also bring him unto the door, or unto the doorposts, and the master shall bore his ear through with an awl, ouch, and shall serve him forever. But the concept was being treated fairly. Number two, a man can renounce his freedom and submit to slavery, which is what was mentioned at the end of that verse. He could renounce his freedom and be a slave for as long as he was willing to do that. Now, discovering how this law still affects us today. The New Testament, the Christian Sabbath, or Sunday, the first day of the week, is not the seventh day as it was in a Jewish custom. And some illustrations of that, Acts 20, verse 7, and upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them, ready to depart on the morrow, and continued his speech until midnight, and that's when the young man fell out of the loft and died. I think there's something there to be learned for preaching too long. 1 Corinthians 16:2, upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. And so he's talking of, in the New Testament, the beginning of the church, the first day of the week, Sunday, was the Sabbath. So this it has changed. There are some changes that have taken place. Letter B, the temple was a place of worship on the Sabbath for the Jews. We talked about Jesus already being an example of that. The Apostle Paul also did the same thing in Acts 17:2. As it said of Jesus Christ, it says, and Paul, as his manner was, went in unto them, and three Sabbath days reasoned with them out of the Scriptures. So, in the New Testament, Jesus gave the example. Paul gave the example of being in the temple, as the custom was of their day, and he was there on the Sabbath. Let us see the church, the body of Christ, meeting together in the local church is now the place for congregational worship. And we are to gather together. You know, when talking to someone recent, I'd say within the last 4 months or so, we had a discussion on this, and obviously it was someone who doesn't feel compelled to be at church very often. And I asked the question, why is that? Well, because there's no biblical precedent. The Bible doesn't say I have to be in church on a Wednesday. I said, okay. I mean, is there any other reason? I mean, I see the principle that Jesus did according to the custom of the day. The custom of the day in his day was to be in the temple on the Sabbath. The Apostle Paul, as the custom was of the day, was in the temple on the Sabbath. The custom of today would be to be in church. To us, it's three times a week. That's the custom. Does that mean if you miss, you're in trouble? No. Does that mean some churches are wrong if they have church on Sunday morning and Sunday night and that's it? No. But are we better off to be in church than we are to be skipping? I mean, where are we during church? What is the reason for missing? And I cannot turn to a verse of Scripture and tell you that God says we ought to be there on Wednesday. But I can tell you this, is the verse that we go to very often in Hebrews 10:25. It says, so much the more. Not so much the less, or not less than you used to. He says, so much the more as you see the day approaching. You cannot find for us a really good example of someone who goes to church less and less and is better off because of it, is more godly because of it. Here's my fear. And I said this to this person. Someone once said that what parents do in moderation, children will do in excess. So, if I go to church Sunday morning and Sunday night, what does that mean, statistically speaking, that my children are going to do? Statistically, they're going to go Sunday morning. And then what happens on the next generation? The next generation, if if they're only going Sunday morning and they're going, you know what, I got some other things I got to do, it's pretty easy to start skipping Sunday morning. Before you knew it, you have a whole generation that knows not the Lord. And does it mean that someone is definitely godly if they go three times a week? No, it doesn't mean that. Does it mean that they have more opportunity to be godly? I think so. I think that they're exposing themselves to truth more often. They're exposing themselves to the accountability of good, godly people around in the church. You stick around, you do yourself a favor if you stick around after a service rather than flying out of the place as if the place is on fire. You do yourself some good to stand around in the pews and talk to people. Now, I might drive Ronnie Gianetto crazy because he's trying to turn the lights off, but you can stretch it a little bit and have a good time together. But we're better off because of it. There's a good accountability. It's a good habit. And I guess we just have to ask ourselves, why am I missing? And Jesus' precedent, he was there as the custom of the day. And so was the Apostle Paul. Letter D, the Old Testament Sabbath was celebrated after 6 days of work. Thus, the people would work or earn their rest. As believers in the New Testament, we rest, being the first day of the week, and then we work for 6 days. We work because of our salvation, not for our salvation. Ephesians 2:10. And then, as we mentioned, some of the overview, the lessons, the main ones, it's a picture of salvation. We need to be diligent in our work. We need to know when to rest so that we can be still and know that He is God. And we need to have regular Sabbath when we can sit at the feet of Jesus and get to know Him better, as Martha struggled with and Mary learned how to do. And Jesus said, I'm not going to take it from her. And it was a good habit for her. So is the Sabbath for today? That's a question that you need to answer. Is it for you? I would say that looking at what the Bible principles are, that it's not required under the same regulations as the Old Testament. Does God still talk about the Sabbath for us? Yes, He does. It's the Sabbath being a time of slowing down, time of gathering around with the family, time of worship, and I believe that is still biblical. Will I be stoned if I skip? No. So that the harshness of the law has been removed. But it's still, as we mentioned of some of the others, even though it's not mentioned as a commandment, is a good idea. Dietary laws, I don't have to follow them, still a good idea. There's still some reasons why God had those laws in the Old Testament. All right, what I want to do, that'll conclude for tonight. We're done a little bit early, and there's good reason for that for some of you. But what I want to do, too, next week will be the midterm for biblical law. The midterm will be take-home, okay? But here's what I'm asking for you to do. This is the homework. This week is homework. And what I'm asking you is fill out the questions on these two pages. So this is going to count as a homework grade. But it's also a review for the test and the content that will be on the test. The test will be a take-home, but not an open notebook. Okay? So this will tell you, I'm not going to pull any tricks on you, this will be the content that's on the test, but it's not going to be open notebook. So this here that I'm giving you right now, this will count as your homework, but it'll also be your review for the midterm. And then next week I will give you the midterm. You can take it home and work it on it during the week, return it the following week. Just keeping in mind that it is not open notebook, it is not open Bible. I expect you to know that material that I am listing in here. Okay, so I will give this out to you, and you can work on this week.